Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
This is going to be so fun.
Fuck, I don't know what I was going to say.
We say this every time.
Though, I know. You know what I mean? Every time. We never know how to start.
Listen, we've been waiting to talk to all these people for a very long time. That's why we started this podcast.
Yes.
And, you know, we're knocking them out one by one. And I have no problem applauding myself for doing that or anything else.
Every episode, we get closer and closer to making our own scent, I think.
Which is honestly, truly the only reason we're doing this.
Absolutely. That's our pyramid scheme.
Okay, wait. I was thinking, and I was going to text you this weekend as I was stomping around. I think our first scent offering should be the Smell You Later scent. And then, when our fans are begging us for more, we each do a scent in the Smell You Later collection. Like, there's a Sable and there's a Tynan. And like, yours would obviously outsell mine, but
I don't think so. I think yours would probably be more widely appealing.
Because it would just smell like cake.
And then mine would have few but very dedicated, loyal fans.
Because yours would smell smart and mine would smell like frosting.
People want the best of both worlds.
I know.
Like, maybe they'll be sold as a duo, you know?
They could be. Well, we got to get there. Someone sign us for a fragrance deal, please.
We could do this, right?
I mean, we could do this.
Totally.
We know people who have made fragrances.
Wait, we do.
And by that, I mean, would you guys fuck with our fragrances? We know that you would.
We'll crowdsource our fragrance.
Absolutely not. I don't want anyone's opinion but my own. Half the time, I don't even like that.
We'll take their opinions and then be like, okay, we're going to do something totally different.
Yeah, exactly. That's a complete Tynan energy. Thank you for your input that I asked for. I'm not taking it.
Yeah, pretty much. But it's good to know.
I'm so excited to be back this week.
It's the highlight of my week every week.
I know. I mean, I'm excited to be back every week. But like you said, it is the highlight.
Yeah. I mean, it's getting warmer now.
Oh my God.
I've noticed too, when I walk around on the street, even with my mask on, things are much more fragrant in the world.
I know. It was 63 degrees out. Yeah. I just wanted to get my tits out. But yeah, springtime is here, I think.
Yes. It's a fool's spring. There's always 1 week in the beginning of March where it gets super warm. And then everyone's like, let's go, girls. And then 2 weeks later, it's just cold again. Before it actually gets spring, but
right,
I don't know. I'm just excited that things smell like things.
That's true. Oh, we have a giveaway that we should do at some point.
Oh shit! Oops.
maybe we'll do it next episode.
Yeah, let's do it next episode.
That we're recording tomorrow. No, we didn't.
We did not prepare.
So tune in next week for our first Smelly Lit giveaway. Well, Sable, what do you smell like today?
Oh, today I smell like something that I've been hoarding for a while because it's been under embargo forever.
Same. We got these so early.
Yeah, but it's the Boy Smells fragrance called Violet Ends.
Ooh.
Yeah, which I think is a pun from Westworld. Is that right? Or I think it's just, the saying Violet Ends.
It was Shakespeare.
Oh, yeah, probably. You know what? I'm an idiot. Westworld got it from Shakespeare. Duh.
I mean, look who you're talking to. I've never cracked a book. It's fine.
See, with our brains combined, we can know things.
We have one brain.
We have one brain in between the two of us. But what's interesting is that Violet Ends, I thought it was going to be very floral because of Violet, but it actually smells like this really sophisticated, leathery kind of... I don't know. It's like this leathery, sweet, suedey scent that is very much up my alley. The makeup of it is bergamot, rhubarb. I love rhubarb. I think it's very underutilized.
Actually, I hate rhubarb.
Really? I love it.
As a flavor, as a scent, I like it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I like it in this.
I feel like rhubarb is like fig in that it smells different in whatever different scent it's in.
Agreed.
It's very mutable. But yeah, rhubarb, black pepper, tobacco leaf, black tea, violet, incense, orris, white birch, and smoked papyrus. Still not sure what papyrus is, but I think I like it.
Is it right?
I don't know. And there's a plant? I don't know. It's a font. It's the yoga font.
That. It's the coffee shop font.
Yeah, yeah, totally. But the combination of all those things gives you this peppery leather that is so softly sweet. And it just feels very sleek to me. It's not sweet in necessarily an inviting way, but it's almost sweet in like a threatening way.
Yes, that's such a good way to put it.
Yeah, there's something very threateningly sophisticated about this scent, which, you know, when you think of the name Violet Ends, it's like, duh. Like, I think it's I think it's meant to be aggressive, but I feel very rich and fancy when I wear it.
Pause. For once, I was right. It's a Shakespeare quote from Romeo and Juliet. These violent delights have violent ends. Honey.
That's the thing that Westworld says. So we were both right. See, one brain.
She has got a degree. Go on.
But yeah, I just have the comp. I don't have the actual bottle of the fragrance, but I often wonder with these comps if it's like the final product. And I think it is.
For sure. Cause that's what's going to be reviewed for press.
Right. Okay. Good. So it is. This is like, I feel like a very, like an alternate universe version of me where I'm like this rich tech heiress who like has a Tesla and I don't know, probably has like several degrees and doctorates in some sort of astronomy, but also is extremely fashionable. I feel like I'm describing Villanelle from Killing Eve.
I feel like you're just describing yourself.
Now that I think about it, it is very much so like the vibe is very Villanelle to me. I know that there was that one episode of Killing Eve where she goes to a perfumer and asks for a custom fragrance. And her whole description is like, I want to smell like an emperor that was injured by someone very close to them, but has recovered and now is coming back for revenge. That's the scent. I think that is the scent.
I'm so glad I don't have a TV. No, I really like this one. How do you feel about the Boy Smells Fine Fragrance collection as a whole? There are 5 scents.
I think they're all really beautiful scents, but I also think a lot of them, to me, are a bit similar.
Really?
Yeah, Suede Pony, I think, is another standout.
Yes, same. Absolute same.
Yeah, that's a really warm, sandy, musky one that's really lovely.
I think that's going to be like the one for them.
Yeah, but the other ones like Rose Load, Tantrum, Fleur de Virgin, is that, yeah, like all of those, they're, to me, all kind of like sisters, you know, where they're floral with little variations on intensity and like punchiness.
Okay. I may just be repeating what you just said, but I don't think I am. I completely agree with you that Suede Pony is like the one. I also think Tantrum is also the one.
Yes.
Really, really like Tantrum a lot.
Me too.
For obvious reasons. What I like about the Boy Smells Fine Fragrance collection is that Rose Load, Violet Ends, and what is it called? I've got it right here. Fleur de la Virgin. All of the florals, which I don't usually like, are like...
They're interesting.
They're interesting, but classic takes. Like, with Violet Ends, you smell violet. With Rose Load, you smell rose.
Sure.
But, like, with Rose, it's, like, a really, like, jewel-toned, glassy rose. Mm. And, like, Violet Ends, it's really purple, but really tart. And Fleur de la Virgin is just super, like, dewy and earthy and beautiful. It's funny, because I think a lot of people are going to like them. If you like any bits of these florals, absolutely, you'll really like these. And I don't like florals, and I quite like all of these. Yeah, I'm super impressed by it all. It wasn't what I was expecting from the Fine Fragrance collection. You know, I think my dumbass thought that they were going to do, I don't know, like wearable versions of their candles maybe or something along those lines.
I thought of that too. You know? But they don't smell like their candles at all, I think.
They don't. But they do smell from the same universe.
Yeah.
You know, I do think they're going to do a slow burn wearable because it's huge. And they've already had it.
Oh, they did.
I'm not blowing. This is public. If you are paying attention, Miss Casey Musgraves put a giant ass bottle of it on her Instagram story about last year, some time ago. It was clearly a fine fragrance version of it. So don't sue me, sue Casey Musgraves. No, I'm super happy to finally hear, because we've been sitting on these since like before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're great. I do think they're all pretty intense, which is not a bad thing. You know?
No, they've all got attitude, which I appreciate.
Yeah, I do too. I think the bottle's cool.
Yeah, statements, they're very impactful. And like, also, they're just very unique, quirky scents, which I think is cool.
Yeah, it's weird. I think they're equal parts, the three florals at least, like classic and innovation and scent. I think they're great. Mm.
Yeah, they have personality.
I'm really excited for people to smell them.
Yeah. You know? How much are they? Like, I don't even know.
I have no idea. There's also a discovery kit.
They're $98.
$98. All right.
For 2.2 ounces.
Okay. That's like right in between small and a large. I'm fine with that.
For a medium. That's not bad.
That's right with my spirit.
Oh, it's interesting. They have things like, if you love these candles, you'll love this scent. Okay.
That's smart.
Yeah. The bottles are really cool looking.
I love the bottles. They're so weird, but so cool. Mm-hmm. It's also kind of like a throwback to the candle, don't you think? So like, So listener at home, whip out your phone and Google the Boy Smells Fine Fragrance, because it's a little glass component with the pink Boy Smells label on it and then a very tall black cap. It's like very shiny. And if you think about it, it's almost like the proportions of pink and black that you see almost equal the candle, because there's a lot of black and a little pink. You know what I mean? It's sort of the same way.
Yeah, they're really cool. I like them a lot.
I do too. I'm so excited that they're finally here.
Tynan, what do you smell like today?
I smell like something I'm really, really enjoying right now, and it took me a second to get a hold of. I think it is actually currently sold out. It's very new, but I'm sure it is coming back. It is called Internal Affairs by a Toronto-based creative and entrepreneur that goes by the name Almost Guilty. But the fragrance is called Internal Affairs. It's Black-owned. It just dropped in late fall. I recently got my hands on it, and I am kind of obsessed with it. It's really fruity and fresh, but also there's almost a peppery note to it that almost shines through the bright, juicy, fruity notes. And I just like, I wore it for the first time yesterday and I just kept going back to it. I kept sniffing my arm and my chest. So the build of the scent, at the top, you've got lemon, black currant, and apple. In the middle, you've got pear, raspberry, jasmine, and patchouli. And then the base is vanilla, cedarwood, oak moss, and musk. And that sounded very heavy on fruit, and I suppose that it is. But something about, and there's no pepper, but whatever... What am I trying to say? However they layered in the, whatever it is, the patchouli, the musk, the woods, the jasmine, it creates a really heady, almost sharp darkness to it that doesn't even balance. It sort of overthrows the fruit. It's sort of a push and pull the entire time you wear it. It is so nice. I like it so much. If you are familiar with Wilhelm perfume, like you said, the flat bottles with the yellow label and lid, this smells, I don't want to say similar, but similar to Morning Chess. It's just the closest thing I can compare it to. But Morning Chess is a lot brighter on the fruit, and then the base is more earthy. Whereas this, it's like all the darkness is up front and the fruit, it like comes up after it. I don't know. I think it's like just a really fun new fragrance. I'm excited to wear it throughout the spring and into summer. Obviously, I like that it's black owned by a young brand, and the bottle also is gorgeous. It sort of looks like a Narciso Rodriguez bottle, but it's all white. The deco is sort of like off-white, like the brand off-white. That's a little referential. I'm not crazy about that, but I don't know. As the fragrance goes, I think it's great. I hope it goes wider. I hope everyone gets their hands on it. It's fantastic.
Cool. They're a new brand.
Yes, they're very new. Yeah.
Speaking of new fragrance brands, the guest we have on today's episode is the CEO of a group, Scent Beauty, that you may know best from the creators of the Cher perfume. and the forthcoming Dolly Parton fragrance, but they make a lot of fragrance surrounding, you know, culturally relevant figures in every realm.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not just like, you know, fashion people or like celebrities per se.
Obviously Cher and like Dolly are like the biggest of the big, like,
oh, for
I know
sure.
I throw this word around all the time, but like they are like the literal icons.
Yes.
But they also do like opera stars and, you know, people that are big in their category.
Yeah,
it may not be household names to everyone. I think that's, and I think that's beautiful.
I think it's interesting because it brings a lot more people into fragrance who aren't necessarily like beauty people, or it's not necessarily like an actress or a musician, a singer. They also do have a bunch of influencers who have fragrances with them. And unfortunately, they're not the influencers I've heard of, but I also don't really know who people are. So that's just, that's on me. But it's interesting to me to see a brand that seems to be built around creating fragrance around culturally relevant figures. So, because as you know, we love to talk about celebrity scents.
We stan celebrity scents in this house.
So this is kind of like doing that in a slightly more thoughtful way.
Well, I'd also rather hear about a celebrity scent from a company that does celebrity scents.
Yeah.
I don't want to say exclusively, but like they specialize in it. I would also love to talk to Coty about a celebrity scent, of course.
Oh, yeah.
But like this is the point of Scent Beauty, is to get these fragrances out there. And I think that probably the process is a lot more streamlined.
Yeah.
But I guess we'll find out about it. Have you smelled any of their scents?
I actually don't think I have.
I actually interviewed Cher for the Cher.
Oh, that's right.
Fall of 2019 for you. No, you were gone.
I was gone.
For Allure.
Yeah.
Well, I did it for Allure. And then I have recently smelled the Dolly Parton perfume.
Right.
I got two down.
So we have the CEO of the brand who formerly came from Coty, which is like, what are they like? The biggest global fragrance conglomerate company in the world?
If not the biggest, they're one of the girls.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we got the head honcho of Scent Beauty on.
Let's do it.
So my name's Steve Momoris. I'm the CEO of Scent Beauty. We are a new emerging company, which is a brand incubator in the fragrance space. And we basically are a company that is a digital omni-channel company where we're creating new, you know, exciting, culturally relevant brands. And we are launching them first through digital platforms like our own website, scentbeauty.com. And then we're actually moving these brands into retail. And today, as you probably know, the biggest growing segment in retail are dot-coms and actually the mass market. So the world has turned on its head in this kind of COVID environment. That's really what we do. I've been in the beauty industry my whole life. I would probably characterize myself as someone who's not a caricature of the beauty industry. I used to be a professional rugby player.
Oh, wow, cool.
In Paris for 25 years. I sound American. I may look American, but I'm actually Greek, and I've had kind of an international life. So I've had an amazing career. I mean, I love the beauty industry. I worked for L'Oreal for a long time, Yves Rocher, and then I was at Coty, where I was the chief marketing officer for 15 years, based out of Paris. And now I'm back in the United States. Well, I guess I'm virtual. I live in the Boston area. I'm passionate about the beauty industry. I just love it because it's always reinventing itself. And scent and fragrance is particularly fascinating because it's sort of the invisible beauty, right? The emotional beauty. And it's always, you know, finding a new way into consumers' hearts. So in a nutshell, that kind of gives you an idea of who I am, at least from the beauty industry perspective.
That's so cool. I love when I hear how people have several careers in their life that have nothing to do with each other. That's really cool.
That's true. I think I'm a walking contradiction, I'm sure.
So when you were getting into beauty, did you always love fragrance or did you get to know it more throughout your career?
Well, I think my life was sort of a serendipitous series of accidents. So, I mean, I was an architecture student, believe it or not. I had no idea I'd ever end up in the beauty industry. My first job was at Procter & Gamble, where I landed as a assistant product manager on CoverGirl makeup. So I suddenly became an expert in makeup and American women who wanted to look like Barbie dolls and Christie Brinkley and mascara and blush and all these things. And then from there, my career just sort of sequentially followed suit. So, you know, I left Procter & Gamble and joined L'Oreal in New York. And I worked in every category. I worked on cosmetics, I worked on fragrances, I worked on skincare. I moved to France and I spent most of my adult life in Paris. And I acquired a taste for fragrance as a business. But then later in life, I saw the beauty of the actual product and what it meant mm-hmm. to consumers. And actually my mom, who was Greek and very kind of glamorous, like I realized, you know, she wore fragrances her whole life. She was, even though I grew up in a little town called Garden City, New York.
I grew up in Floral Park. That's right next door.
Okay, there you go. That's so, you know, little, yeah. I grew up in this little storybook suburb.
Yeah.
But I had a mom and we, you know, I was christened in the Greek Orthodox Church mm-hmm. in Garden City, which you may know. But my mom was like, wore lots of makeup and wore lots of fragrance. So I look back and I say, well, you know, I had some connection. You know, I had this mom who was really into beauty products. So I ended up being a purveyor of the beauty world. But I found fragrance to be an infinitely fascinating category of products because, truthfully, it's an emotional decision and there's so many emotional connections. You know, people wear fragrances because it reminds them of their childhood or a romantic moment or sad moment. Scent has the most clear link to memory. And what I find fascinating is our industry has found every imaginable way of creating, you know, a billion-dollar industry on scent. And obviously beyond, you know, the eau de parfum, eau de toilette forms, scent finds its way into everything. Laundry detergent, linen sprays, body spray. So totally. it's truly a fascinating product category.
I'm just curious, do you think that having experience in, like you said, every category in beauty, makeup and skincare, do you think that you approach fragrance differently than someone that may have just only been in beauty their whole lives?
I would say that's a good question. I would say I'm a victim of having a very erudite, deep knowledge of any category where I don't have perspective. I'd say as I've gotten older, I've become more of a businessman. Mm-hmm. I'm a CEO of a company. So I see a fragrance product or brand first from a business standpoint, and then I see it actually from an artistic standpoint, and hopefully there's a crossroads of artistic merit and commercial merit. I do know people who are geniuses, who, you know, olfactory noses and perfumers, and they are so immersed in the craftsmanship of the product, they can only see it through one lens. So I would say yes. I think because I've had a broad-based beauty experience, I look at fragrance from multiple lenses. I can appreciate a great fragrance. It's sad to say, but there are amazing fragrances out there that I never see the light of day commercially. And there's some really crappy fragrances that are commercially successful. But I think, you know, I think another part of me is that because I have had a like multiplicity of experiences, but I think I've always brought a freshness of perspective. You know, at the end of the day, I think in any industry, trying to see products through consumer lenses and trying to understand why consumers are buying and using products for societal and cultural reasons usually unlocks a way of creating great businesses. So that's probably the best way I can answer that question.
I feel like you're totally right. There's in beauty in general, but in anything that has creativity or artistic components in it, unfortunately, like if you don't have a good business plan for it, there's just no way it gets out into the world to
Doesn't
be
matter.
Successful. Yeah.
I mean, I've worked on amazing brands and projects in my career, which were a crossroads of artistic achievement and commercial savvy. And one of them was Daisy by Marc Jacobs. And that
took
the market by storm.
Yeah.
With a rubber daisy. It was a little sardonic. It was a little iconic. It was like false innocence.
Yeah.
And, you know, we worked with Mark on the design and an incredible fragrance. And it was just hit home because it was like a whimsical mm-hmm. kind of almost parody of fragrance.
Right.
Daisies ironically don't have any scent, and it was named after his dog. And, you know, we did beautiful photography with Jürgen Teller, but the whole project just sort of assumed a life of its own, and it became a game changer. in the fragrance industry. And it's been a pleasure for me to work with so many great artists like Marc Jacobs, and I've worked with Lady Gaga, I've worked with Beyonce, so many different really amazing people, Balenciaga. It's made the fragrance part of my job, I would say, the fragrance category, a little more flavorful and more fantasy than, let's say, cosmetics or skincare.
Wait, did you do Fame by Lady Gaga?
Yes, I did.
Oh my fucking God.
I have the scars to prove it.
Oh my God, my mind is blown.
The black fragrance.
Yeah, yes.
Okay, I'm going to tell you a story.
Please,
please.
This is very silly and funny. So I met Lady Gaga. I had to convince her to do a deal with Coty. I had to convince her to like me, to like us and all our creativity. So I got a call. This is like the movies. I got a call like on a Friday afternoon in the summer that she was giving a concert in Madison Square Garden. And she wanted to see me backstage. And I was like, fuck. And I was like, I don't know. I was about to go to the Hamptons with my friends. And I'm like wearing clothes, which you would not associate with a beauty executive. Like I had like, you know, a tank top and jeans. I was like a plumber. And I had a run and I called my friend and no one was in my office. It was Friday afternoon and no one was in the office. Everyone was gone. So I called a friend of mine who's really cool. I said, can you come with me? I need someone to help me like carry boards and products. Can you come with me to Madison Square Garden like in an hour? He's like, really? He said, yeah. I said, I have to have a meeting with Lady Gaga. I need someone who like is carrying things. And I said, don't say very much. Just, I'll tell you what to do. So we go like, it's like a hot afternoon in like August. And we go see her. And the place we're having this meeting is a dump. There's glitter everywhere. And it looks crazy. And she comes in and she, you know, has kind of like a, you know, robotic voice. It's like, hello, how are you? You know, and we're showing her like boards and concept boards. And she says to me, she's like, I want a fragrance that smells like sperm and blood. And
that was a test. You
know, and I'm trying to be professional. Yeah. I'm like, well, I said, we can do that. I said, it may not be the best selling fragrance. She's like, I want it to smell like sperm and blood, and I want to call it bitch. So of course, because I want to sign the contract, I'm like, we'll do whatever you want. We'll figure it out. So we fast forward, and I'm sure she thought to herself, I will never hear from these idiots again who look like plumbers, these two guys. So we have a meeting in Paris. She comes and I start showing her samples of fragrances that smell like sperm. And they were perfect recreations. And we even found a guy from Brazil who looked like her boyfriend, who at the time, I believe, was a bartender who was like from Omaha, Nebraska. This like really hot guy. Yeah. And we found a replica of him. And we got a sample of his sperm and we recreated it.
Stop.
Seriously. So we were passing around these vials.
Is that even legal?
I don't know.
Like break some sort of health code.
Vials. I'm like, here's the smell of sperm from this man. And I take this picture. I show this like hot guy with tattoos and stuff that looked like your boyfriend. And I said, this is what sperm smells like. And we did a perfect, and you can olfactorily recreate scents in a very precise way.
Yeah.
And then said, but we're going to show you variations on sperm. So this is sperm in the shower, and this is sperm on panties. And we're showing all these things. And I said, that will not work as a fragrance, but you can put it inside a fragrance. And now we're going to wrap the sperm. And then we're showing her all these fragrances. Well, she was like, I think she was shocked. And then we showed her samples of blood, of what blood smells like. And actually, blood smells metallic. It smells like iron and coin, and actually a little bit like an unripe pear. It has an olfactory resemblance. And we're showing her the smell of blood. And we said, blood's a little bit better as it has more synergy with other scents. Mm-hmm. So we showed her all this. We trademarked bitch without the eye with a star, and it was done. And she said, we're going to contract. And we did it. And then we, after that, we went on the journey and created Fame Black. And that was another one. She's like, I want it black. And I'm like, sure, we can do black. And I'm thinking, I have no fucking idea. Can I curse on the show?
Yes, you can.
Excuse my language. I have no fucking idea how to do black fragrance. And we went to our labs at Coty and we said, we want to do a black fragrance. And we figured out how to create a black fragrance that when it hits the air, the pH balance changes and it's clear. So we went back again and I said, here's the black fragrance. And I had my friend, the same friend who didn't want to go the first time. He was now my buddy, and he's like the Vanna White on this journey.
Yeah.
And he was wearing a white shirt. And I said, we spray it on a shirt. It's perfectly clear. She was shocked. I said, this is it. So we launched Fame with a gold claw, a black juice that was clear, a product that contained blood, not sperm, because I told her it was done by Tom Ford, and you don't want to imitate someone.
Oh.
Agreed. And then we launched Fame, and the rest was history.
Wow.
That's so... Well, wait. But Bitch never launched, though, right? It was Fame.
No. So we changed. Right. So my own two cents as the CMO of Coty was like, it's a little bit too obvious, and it's kind of too playing into the hands of your consumers, and it won't last. It won't be a classic. Yeah. And we came up with this concept of Fame, and the fact that Fame can be painful and lonely and depressing, which in her case it certainly was. And we did this incredible commercial with Stephen Klein, which you can look at, like with latex and the sort of dark story. You might have seen it. And
I've seen it all.
You've seen it. Yeah, you've seen it. You're an aficionado. Yeah. And we had a big party at the Guggenheim Museum where she was in an egg. And then people were like touching her through a hole in the egg. It was insane. And then she came out of the egg all dressed up and then went back in the egg. And then some man dressed in overalls climbed into the egg and shaved the back of her head and tattooed her head with an angel, which you can find on YouTube. All part of my crazy career to create a multi-million dollar business.
That's so cool.
Those days are over. that excess is over.
When I was a beauty editor, I remember Coty always threw the most lavish parties.
We did. I have been guilty of these parties. I mean, we had an incredible launch party for the Beckhams in Venice. We launched their Intimately fragrance. It was incredible at a Palazzo. Beautiful. We had a party for Kylie Minogue at a nightclub on the Seine in Paris for the launch of a product called Showtime. We had an amazing party for Kate Moss in Marrakesh at a Riyadh on the roof of this beautiful palace. And we had all the beauty editors riding donkeys with like the whole town with men in torches lighting the way to this Riyadh. It was insane.
Wow.
I think back on that era and I thought, my goodness, the overtures we made to seduce editors, to write about products. And it was part of the industry then, but that's really changed. It's really changed. Mm-hmm. Now it's about the consumer more than the industry.
Yeah, definitely. I'm so mad that I got into beauty editorial like after that.
That crazy era where you had like big budgets. And
yeah, I know.
Poorly paid and you had great benefits. That was the era.
Yeah. What's interesting to me about, because when I think I had read in a previous profile that said that you had been at Coty before creating Scent Beauty, and I was like, oh, that makes perfect sense because Coty makes so many celebrity and designer scents. So to take that and then turn it into something a little bit more, I don't know, specialized, it made sense to me.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. So Coty was a great chapter in my life. I worked under a great CEO, Berent Betz, a great chairman of Coty, Peter Harf. The company exploded in the millennium, at the turn of the millennium, and it was exciting because they were breaking rules, inventing the celebrity fragrance category, working on special designer fragrances. Calvin Klein Euphoria was a huge success at the time. So I would say there, this whole idea of breaking boundaries, creating commercially successful fragrances with artistic merit was a hallmark of that Coty at that time. So I think it was a natural evolution for me to say, okay, now in 2021, what's happening? So obviously everything's moved digital.
Brick
and mortar has completely different kind of state of being. We're just recovering from the fear of virus and people not going out and people don't use testers. So how do you recreate all these experiences for a consumer on their mobile phone or on their laptop? And I found that Scent Beauty was our opportunity to find the ways in which we can connect with consumers through digital assets, through storytelling, pictures, sampling, discovery, editorial. We, interestingly, at Scent Beauty, when we started it, it was like a whole other universe, like we were in another solar system. And we had to figure out, how do people buy fragrances online? How do they discover new fragrances? And it was very hard. And we realized the real source of figuring that out was looking at companies like Glossier or Warby mm-hmm. Parker yeah. or Drunk Elephant. There are many these digital leaders who are speaking to the consumer in their language, you know, with yeah. organic posts and influencers and affiliates and, you know, community-based marketing. And it wasn't the old, you know, tried and true formula where you did advertising and people saw it on their television sets and went into Macy's to buy the products. That's over.
Yeah.
So we were, you're right, I would say I leveraged all my connections and marketing prowess at Coty, but I was now in the founding of this company, you know, asking ourselves, how do we translate it to the new digital consumer? And that's what we're doing.
Yeah, right. It made sense to me, especially with like influencer culture, that like the idea of celebrity now is so much more broad.
Yes.
Totally.
And so much more accessible.
What's cool is that when I was reading Scent Beauty's mission statement, you touched on something that Tynan and I always critique and explore about the fragrance industry, which is like the gender duality, hypersexualization, and unattainable luxury that seems to have been like the traditional tenets of the fragrance industry, right. but now is just completely obsolete.
Right.
And I'm wondering if when you were creating Scent Beauty, was that the exact thing that you were trying to... Yeah,
that's a really good point to raise. So yeah. we realized when we created Scent Beauty that we needed to create brands that resonated with the new sensibility about fragrance. And it completely turned the fragrance industry on its head, right? So the genderization, if you use such a word, is over. Like you do not normally now launch a product saying for him, for her, it's maladroit in French. You know, you don't
yeah.
you don't target the gender it's going to. You let the person, whoever they are, whatever spectrum they're on, choose the fragrance. Now you can say a fragrance is masculine or feminine in the way you describe it, but you can't go so far to say it's for him or for her.
Right.
That's really dated language. So
yeah.
I think the communication of whom the product is going to is left open-ended. That's a big change. I think from an olfactory standpoint, what you're seeing is the normal clustering of notes that were previously considered very feminine or girly, or clustering of notes that were very masculine, is changing, and you're seeing a lot of crossover. So fragrances that have masculine notes with some feminine notes, and then feminine products with masculine notes. There is a big trend of women, or people who identify as women, choosing products that are more masculine. So you see
right.
a big trend of women using colognes, and colognes that are kind of genderless.
Right.
So you're seeing this trend, and you're also seeing a trend with what I call subtlety. So people are looking for scents that are intimate, which is only they can smell. So it's more about them and how they're feeling in their cloud of scent rather than them making a statement to others. You know, the classic counterpoint to that is, you know, the powerful fragrances of the 80s, like the Giorgio
yeah.
or Beverly
yeah.
Hills, that you can smell a mile away. You know,
yeah.
some powerful woman's going down Rodeo Drive and you can smell her a mile away. That's like completely not resonating with consumers today. Mm-hmm. But a lot of these issues did come up in the development of our brands. Also, excess packaging is not viewed favorably because people are really looking for cleaner products, environmentally responsible. So, you know, designing, you know, very lots of plastic, lots of molding, lots of decoration is not really resonating. I mean, if you look at, you know, Fenty Beauty, beautifully done, minimalist with some design features, I think that's where the market's going. Even Glossier.
Yeah.
With ordinary products that are functional, where the story is more important than the product, is where the market's moving. So I think young people, to their credit, are not victims of consumerism, of hoarding things for the sake of having things that look good. That's not their paradigm. They're really just looking for good products that are great and easy to use and that have some kind of community component or charity component. That's where the market's going.
Yeah, social causes, I feel like, are such a huge tie-in to like marketing, for lack of a better word.
No, that's completely true. That's completely true. We're seeing it more and more, especially in the makeup space.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't help but be cynical of that, but I suppose that's another conversation.
I know. What's funny is actually a year ago, I was consulting with a branding agency who was working with Scent Beauty, and they give you a roster of the figures who Scent Beauty is creating a scent with, and we come up with stories around them. And one of them was Courtney Love, Cher, of course, and now Dolly Parton. And I'm like, whoa, how is this brand getting these huge, huge, huge stars? Is that Cody Rolodex?
Obviously, I mean, I have a, you know, industry track record. So, people, you know, looking for new companies. But we, the company, we're a small company with 15 employees. And we are a powerhouse core group of people. We're always looking for new relevant brands. Like Cher is still relevant, amazingly enough. You know, she started in the 60s and she's continuing to go strong. And I knew her manager, and I've always been a big fan of hers. And truthfully, when we do deals with artists, in the end, they just choose us on our merits, which usually has to do with concept, packaging design, fragrance ability. And they, you know, they decide whether they like you, and also, of course, whether the economics are there for them. But Cher was one of our first licenses that we signed. It's been thrilling to work with her. And I mean, it's amazing to me what gravitas she has with all generations. It's kind of shocking. Courtney Love is a legend. That's a project that will be down the road, but she's an amazingly literate, beautiful, interesting woman.
Yeah.
She's a cauldron of artistry, and that's been an exciting relationship. And then Dolly Parton, of course, you know, is a cultural icon, a leader, I would say, in American culture. And we actually just launched her fragrance using discovery sizes on the Super Bowl, and they blew out. Like, we couldn't keep them in stock. Like,
oh, I'm sure.
It was insane.
Yeah.
She has a very, you know, rabid fan base. But I think the fragrance market, the celebrity fragrance market, you have to be careful, because what you always want to do is make sure it's authentic, the artist is engaged. It's not considered a vehicle for the artist to enrich themselves, but it's really something they like to do. And truthfully, Cher loves fragrance. She's been working on fragrances for like 10 years, and Dolly loves fragrance. These are people who love the category, and that's kind of a condition for us to work with anyone.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's been exciting. We have a great roster of brands. We'll have more. We want to go into the Asian market. That's another emerging market, another whole world.
Yeah.
And become, you know, a leader. Not, I mean, the biggest, but become a leader in brand creation in this category.
Yeah. I think I read recently that Firmenich just opened a branch in Shanghai in China.
Yeah.
And they're like, if not the first, like one of the first global fragrance houses in China, which I thought was crazy because China's so huge and like such a global force that I'm like, how could they just be thinking about fragrance now?
Well, the Chinese market obviously is massive, but the Chinese preference for olfactory notes is different, and it merits its own approach. But interestingly, the younger Chinese love Western brands, and they're embracing more and more Western customs in terms of wearing color and wearing scent, even though they don't, you know, they don't bathe in scent. I think per capita use of fragrance is highest in Brazil. I think they swim in fragrances. I think they, you know, when you have companies like Natura and Boticário, the reason is that Brazilian culture enjoys scent. And France, of course, has a very high per capita usage of scent. America is a complicated country, has very different patterns of using fragrance and cosmetics, actually. It's very different from the rest of the world.
How do you mean? That's interesting.
Well, in fragrance, so one, this is my interpretation, which is probably an informed interpretation, but the one distinguishing feature about the United States is its puritanism and its hang-ups with sex influence the way beauty products are consumed.
Absolutely.
So the concept of seduction in the United States or in the American market has been always different because Americans, unfortunately or fortunately, will associate seduction with vulgarity or excess. Mm. Whereas in Europe, seduction is more subtle and more intimate because there's not this sort of, you know, prevailing idea, you know, of guilt, or there's a hang up about seduction and sex.
Right.
And this ties into lots of political issues, which I will not try to go into.
You're totally right, though. Yeah, Americans are very puritanical.
But it translates into fragrance use. So
in
American culture, there is, among men, a fear of scent because they think scent is feminizing. Not anymore among younger men, but it has been. Or scent is gay. You know, there are all these caricatures. Whereas in Europe, if you want to compare those two markets, completely different. You know, all sorts of men wear fragrance, you know, right. Gay, straight, whatever you may want to call it. So cultural values do determine a market. So in the United States, you have very powerful scents that people think of as just purely seductive. And then you have a segment of the market that does not want to appear seductive, that want to appear prim and proper and clean. Clean is a big word in the US. Americans somehow take refuge in this word clean because it feels safe and it's non-sexual and it's non-threatening. So there's another big segment of fragrances in the US that are just clean and flowery and simple. So cultural values do determine olfactory directions. I mean, so that's the fragrance piece. On the cosmetic side, it's interesting, but American women wear lots of makeup, a lot of makeup. And there are a lot of studies that will show you they're wearing makeup to hide their skin. That's one reason. And the second reason is I think American women go through phases where they wear lots of makeup to attract people. And again, they're associating seduction with vulgarity. Whereas in Europe, I think women will wear cosmetics in a more subtle way because for them, you know, the art of, if you want to call it seduction, is much more intimate and is much more subtle. So there are a lot of, you know, I can pontificate on this. I think NPR, by the way, once asked me to actually talk about the subject on the air. I never did it with Linda Wertheimer.
Call them back.
I should have. It was a long time. I met them at dinner. They were like, do you want to go on the air and talk about this? I said, I don't know. Is it that credible from like a man to be talking about this? But the point I'm making is cultural values do determine how certain products are constructed.
Yeah.
And in the end, all smart companies will figure out what are the cultural values, what are the products that respond to those cultural values to create sales and create economies.
That's so interesting. I never thought about how like American values and like sex and shame all inform the way that we wear makeup. That's wild.
Totally.
We're a country founded by pilgrims.
When I worked on CoverGirl makeup a long time ago in the 80s, we did consumer studies showing that CoverGirl makeup was simply a makeup mothers gave their daughters so they look as young as possible, as long as possible, and look as virginal as possible.
Yikes.
And then, like, it's called the barbification of the young American woman. And she tried to look as young as possible, as long as she could, and wore lots of foundation. And by the way, a 16-year-old girl has like perfect skin and doesn't really need foundation. But that was the basis of the CoverGirl brand. And then when the girl in the American culture would grow to a certain age, like 17 or 18, all of a sudden she gave up looking like a Barbie doll and wore tons of makeup, you know, would prowl the mall for boyfriends, like wearing lots of color. It's called a peacock face. She'd actually use color to seduce men. And again, she associated seduction with vulgarity. Now, that's a terrible generalization. It's changed because I think Americans are much more aware of social trends outside the United States, you know, from Europe, from Africa and China. So all that regionalization is sort of blended today. But yes, I'd say the American culture, as pluralistic as it is very influenced by their attitudes towards sex, and those attitudes influence how companies make products.
That's interesting now, especially in terms of, I mean, this entire past year during our pandemic, and, you know, I'm reading all these things saying like, oh, the makeup sector's falling, of course, because everyone's inside or wearing masks, and like fragrance, of course, no one's buying fragrance until later 2020. They're saying actually fragrance sales are picking up now because more people are realizing that they wear fragrance for themselves, not necessarily just to go out and like,
I don't know, kind of
like that's correct.
Advertise their scent. And right. I'm hoping that this is a trend that will, or this won't be a trend, but this will be a habit that continues in the future.
I think so. What's really interesting now in the COVID time, so people's offices are becoming a home space. It's a space where people are working and living, and people obviously are socializing less and less. But yes, consumers are finding a type of confidence and well-being through scent or clouding, yeah. having a cloud of scent. You're seeing a migration from fine fragrance, like the eau de toilette, eau de parfum, into body mist, hair mist,
yeah.
home scenting. And I believe that people are scenting not just themselves, but the space in which they're sitting and working on Zoom yeah. calls. So it is changing. And, you know, candles are big and
oh, yeah.
you know, diffusers. Even, I think, the skincare category are working on scented products that are making people feel good. And I think at the end of the day, this is my own opinion, I think social media creates everyday psychological stress. And I think scent does play a role in de-stressing and making people simply
oh, totally.
Better. Have you gone down the aisle in a supermarket and looked at the detergent category?
It's huge.
It's incredible.
Huge. But they seem to have like the same scent categories. Like everything is like mountain fresh or like
oh my god, you took the words out of my mouth.
Yeah.
What's happening is they're extrapolating fragrance codes in their product offerings. And you can see that, of course, people love the smell of laundry, right? So it's
yeah.
one of the favorite smells of all time among consumers in the US. But the fragrance category is embracing scent as an experience, and it really makes a difference. You know, escapism, yeah. feeling good, well-being, yeah. you know, more and more, it's a way to just make people feel better.
Yeah. I remember actually spending like springing a couple more bucks for like the fancy Method dish soap because it was yuzu scented. And I had never seen anything yuzu scented in like a home product before. And I love yuzu. So I was like, oh, this is interesting.
That's a great brand.
They've
mastered the colors, the transparency, mm-hmm. the scenting. It's really well done.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a migration toward, I would call it in-home scenting, either through traditional scented products. The other trend you may find, the listeners may find interesting, is that men are grooming themselves more and more, and grooming products for men are booming. And you know, the Artist Shaving has been a leader here, but the fact now that men don't have to suffer the embarrassment of going into a Walgreens and, you know, asking someone to buy some fragrance product, they can buy it online and receive it at home, has created a booming market for men's grooming products. And it's happening at walmart.com, you know, all the way
yeah.
to but the men's market is alive and well. And that's nice to know, right? Because, you know, American men are taking care of themselves and care about
yeah.
how they look. And when you see Instagram and all these like beautiful people, you know, they're
yeah.
doing something right. I think they're using beauty products.
Yeah. I think somewhere along the line, someone gave men permission to like give a shit about how they looked. And I think, like you said, it's social True. Media, it's celebrity culture, it's Drake.
Yeah.
but I mean it though. And you know, guys ask the both of me and Sable all the time, like, I want something, but I don't know what, like, they all want something to make them feel like they're taking care of themselves, but they don't know what they want or where to start. But it is nice that, and that's also a generalization, but I also don't care.
No, I think it's true. I think there's a culture, by the way, of tutorial and influence on YouTube and Instagram that is highly mm-hmm. impacting the way men take care of themselves. And if yeah. you look at Instagram, what's interesting about it is obviously a visual medium, but there are so many people there, like hyper beautiful people, people that are so aspirational. But in my life, I've never seen better marketing than by real people. Storytelling, it's mind boggling. And I think people who just want to look better and feel better are finding their role models. And in that sense, it's good. Even though it's virtual, in that sense, I think it's influencing your product purchases. And of course, Instagram smartly is embedding products inside the feeds.
Right, so yeah.
Beautiful people and say, oh, you know, here's a great, you know, shave cream.
Yeah.
And I think that's positive. But
yeah.
it's creating warfare because Instagram's becoming a retailer that's competing with Walmart and CVS and Macy's, right? So it's becoming a retail channel that is highly social media driven. Very fascinating.
Every brand, they die for that user-generated content because, yep. even if it's low quality and like not very well editorialized, it just performs so much better because of the authenticity.
Right.
And I even noticed with fragrance, the way people do flat lays with the bottle or the way they visualize the world of what they think the fragrance is or how they feel it is, it puts it in a, I feel like people actually consider fragrance more when they see it in social media in a way that looks really appealing and really like juicy. Mm-hmm.
Correct. Right. They're putting it in a context.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like it could be a beautiful bottle on a windowsill in some great place. Yeah. It's very interesting to me, but it's just amazing to me, you know, the social media revolution, how much it's impacted how consumers are buying products. And isn't it crazy? Like people your age, you're like masters, like touching your phone and buying things in like 5 seconds, right?
Yeah.
Swipe up products.
It's dangerous.
It's so fast.
Complete your credit card.
I sometimes have to remind myself, like, you can put your phone down and think about this. Like it will still be there when you decide to make that purchase. Like it's, I don't know.
Right. Completely. It's true. It's true.
Unfortunately, I love shopping. I'm sure that no two are the same. But can you take us through the sort of process of landing a celebrity for a scent and how you get to the finish line with that scent? Like, do they always come to you with an idea of what they want it to smell like or notes that they love, and then you take that and start working, or is it different every time?
Well, I would say this. So the origin of a brand by a celebrity very often has to do with money and their business apparatus. I would say that's usually the origin. So someone representing someone says someone would like to do a fragrance and, you know, loves the category, but the underlying reason may be a business reason that they want to make money or want to create a brand or whatever the case may be. However, in my case, I don't ever do business with any celebrity who's just doing it for money, because in the end of the day, it won't be successful. And if they're not really interested in the category, in the end, the consumer can smell authenticity and it won't sell. So very often, to get it over the finish line, as you say, like with Beyonce, with whom I worked, who was lovely, you know, we presented concepts and we presented olfactory directions and ideas. And the truth is, if there's a connection between the company or me and the celebrity, and they like you and they respect your business savvy and they trust your artistic sensibility and they sense that you understand them, then the project goes further. And then, of course, there are all these financial criteria to meet. You know, some artists want percentage of deals, some want joint ownership, some want royalty. It really depends. But once you get past the financial hurdles and the company, or what we call the licensee and the licensor, who's a celebrity, agree on that, then the deal happens and we go to market. It's not as storybook like, you know, someone comes to you and says, I have a great idea. Interestingly, I would say this, in my career, I've been instrumental in providing incentives, or I should say kindling the imagination of the celebrity, because it's hard for them to conceptualize what they want easily. But my job is to read their mind and give them ideas from which they can create a great product. And so I'm kind of the protagonist, but then they go along for the ride and then they end up being the protagonist. And I think that's the best way to describe the relationship.
You're like the scent whisperer.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'll take that. I'll take
in
that
their
title.
Ear, like.
Yeah, that sounds very flattering, actually.
Was Scent Beauty started with the idea that it would be a brand that creates scents based around individuals?
Not exactly. So Scent Beauty was a company that was created to create brands that are culturally relevant. Mm-hmm. And the brand could be a celebrity. It could be an artist. We're working with Jeff Latham, who's a florist.
Right.
We are working with Andre Leon Talley, who's a writer and a fashion icon, I suppose. But my view is we need a multiplicity of sectors. So it could be celebrity, it could be artist,
right.
It could be activist, it could be an author. It could, of course, be a fashion designer, which is a very common sector. You know, Sam Edelman is a great fashion designer with whom we're working. It can be a lifestyle. It could be a brand like Kith. We're not working right. with them. I would love to work with them. But our view is we should have a broad-based view of what fragrance is. I will say this. I see Scent Beauty as a democratic and inclusive company because we don't have a bias like our brands have to be high-end and sold at Harrods.
Right, yeah.
Or our brands are only mass. Like, we see our company as creating brands that represent a crossroads of culture. And there's nothing wrong if someone goes on our website looking for Cher and discovers Renee Fleming's fragrance, the opera singer.
Yeah.
Opera star. So we do believe in this kind of community of inclusivity. I always call it the high-low strategy because it's not like the olden days where you had this ghettoization, where you had like the luxury corner and only the yeah. Dior and the Chanel, and then you had all this mass stuff. I think today the consumer is buying Tom Ford at Walmart. And the consumer also is buying Old Spice at Walmart.
Yeah.
So the just in the same way that gender, the binary has been broken, I think this sort of classification of brands we are breaking because consumers don't think that way. I mean, people don't say, well, I'll only use, you know, a very expensive Hermès and I won't buy anything else. Hermès is an exquisite brand. It's an ultimate code of luxury, I believe. But it doesn't mean the person buying Hermès is also not buying Old Spice. Right. You're buying all of it. So what we try to do is create this crossroads or curation, if you will, of brands from all sectors. The common denominator is authenticity and cultural relevance. And that's where we think we make a difference.
That makes a lot of sense. You're right. Everything kind of, I feel like globally is becoming more democratic, especially in any economic space. So to have something like Scent, which is so traditionally like super expensive or just drugstore, meeting somewhere in the middle just makes right. it that much more attractive and attainable. And I feel like behind the scenes now, especially since all of these beauty brands are realizing this, there's going to be a ton of innovation in the Scent space. But do you have any thoughts on that?
I do. I there is innovation now. So I think yeah. there's a move toward genderless in a very yeah. creative and artful way. I think that's that's a constant innovation. But I think the form is changing. I think that hair mists, linen sprays, body sprays, they're all having different, you know, actuators and vaporization effects. And I think slow diffuse fragrances on the skin that if you rub your skin emit a scent, you know, is a new technology that, you know, that Firmenich, you know, has mastered. Natural fragrances.
Yeah.
The whole separate subject, but, you know, yeah. natural fragrances, organic fragrances, which are very rare and, by the way, are, you know, not stable and don't last, you know, but there is innovation in all sectors. What I think is interesting are brands like Method, who I believe are one of the biggest innovators in scent because they've created simple, beautiful scents associated with color and light and simplicity. And they've created a kind of a well-being experience in ordinary products. So they've taken an ordinary hand wash or dishwashing liquid and have made it a luxury experience. So I always see, you know, I don't even see things always from the fine fragrance side. You know, like Frédéric Malle has created some magnificent scent. Method is just as valid as Frédéric Malle.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Really made a, you know, a beautiful statement in scent, I think, whether they realized it or not.
I think so. Do you know the brand Mrs. Myers?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They also, I feel like we're one of the first people making these odd or like alternative scents for household products.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's amazing. I mean, Serge Lutens, amazing
you know,
designer, interesting scents. That's innovative. But what I think would be exciting if the world just discovered the beauty of scent. Like, you know, I meet a lot of men, particularly in America, is like, I don't like fragrance, you know. I was like, well, it's like, you know, you haven't met the right partner. You haven't fallen in love.
Yeah.
Everyone's capable. So I think it's up to the industry to always be providing the theater, if you will,
yeah.
for consumers to find something that they really love and use.
So many guests we speak to who work in the fragrance industry always say that they encounter so many people who are like, oh, I don't wear cologne. I don't wear perfume. Like, it's not important. And then I'm like, but you wear deodorant, but you wear, like, you choose your laundry detergent and your dish soap.
Wash.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone is scenting themselves in some way.
Mm-hmm. Totally. By the way,
every day.
You that don't, we just have to pity.
And we do. Lady Gaga, can you stand it? I didn't mean to jump in there and like throw the brakes on, but you can't just come into my house and say Lady Gaga and keep it moving. We are going to talk about this.
So were they smelling vials of sperm is what I want to know.
Also that.
Like collecting human tissue, it seems illegal. Then like,
you need to get a sperm sample.
No, but like
easy.
Yeah. Like how, how would you get a sperm, like a scent from sperm without actual molecules from the sperm?
Well, I think, he said you just like sort of recreate it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. Okay, I guess. It does seem a little bit like very, very weird roundabout human trafficking kind of thing.
This one time I was living in LA and I was hanging out with these twin guys and one was gay and one was straight. And we got out of the car. I'm going to have to cut this out. And we get out of the car and we were walking by these hedges and the gay one was like, oh my God, these bushes smell like cum. And his brother was like, you are so disgusting. And then he was like, oh wait, they do. So I guess it does have a smell.
Yeah.
It smells like metal.
I always thought it kind of smelled like bleach.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah.
Like metal and bleach.
That confuses me because like there's nothing about bleach that I think is organic or natural. So I'm just like, how is this correlating?
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand. Weird.
That's real.
Yeah. But wait, I've never smelled Lady Gaga's Fame fragrance. Does it actually smell like the same one? Or they went with blood.
Well,
they
didn't go semen. Blood.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I mean, no, it doesn't. Okay. It's really... I'm not going to pull up the notes right now, but it's like very like plummy. It's a very purple. It's beautiful. Okay. It's like plum and like patchouli and like, I don't know. It's pretty.
Okay.
But I remember though, because that was a fragrance rollout and campaign that just lasted forever. And I was like there for every second of it. But she kept saying like, I wanted a scent that smelled like semen and blood. Like that was the whole story. So I guess there was no semen in it, but there was blood.
Yeah.
Or
the like iron sign. Yeah. The metallic irony sense. That makes sense.
Good. It was really good. Yeah. That was fun. That was a really fun one.
That was a fun one for sure. Yeah.
The black.
Did she do another scent? Did she do?
She did. But by that time she was like angry. So she didn't like promote it at all.
Okay.
At all. It was called like Eau de Gaga. Like no one knew about it. I didn't think about it for Racked.
Then
Rack folded.
Oh, I liked Rack.
I did too. Everyone liked Rack.
Yeah. Oh, well, media.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was your episode. I hope that was interesting for you because it sure as hell was for us.
I fucking want that Courtney Love scent in the worst.
Me too.
I'm going to write about that. I'm going to go to her house and interview her.
Oh my God. Just like Kat Marnell.
Do you hear me, Scent Beauty? Oh God. Oh God. Right?
Yeah. They should let us. I feel like they should.
They should let us.
Yeah.
Oh my God, we can get Courtney Love on. Oh my God, we can get Courtney Love on. He loves us. It's happening.
We planted the seed. I feel like, yeah. Stay tuned for Courtney Love in 2022.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyway,
follow us on Instagram at smellulator.mp3.
I'm Tynan Buck. Sorry. I know what you're doing. I thought we were passing it. She is Sabletooth Tigra. I'm Tynan Buck.
Mm-hmm.
And very mouthy and interrupty. I'm sorry.
Throw us a couple stars on Apple Podcasts if you listen to Apple Podcasts.
It's very late and we're very hungry.
We're so hungry. I'm running out of fumes, man. I'm just going to eat whatever's in my fridge. Right.
Leave us 5 stars. We love you lots. We'll talk to you next time. Smell you later.
Smell you later. I'm like, just end this episode.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.